It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and welcome to another edition of Freedom Fridays. That's right. Welcome, 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 everybody. This is an amazing adventure. Today, we are going to have the most historical lesson that takes us through a timeline of humanity. Just for our foundational Black Americans, yes, just with you right now. So grab all your Caribbean cousins, grab all your friends from abroad, because this is a special edition called Hierarchy. Yes, we are the Caribbean station. We are the knowledge station, and we are going to get into the hierarchical order on a global level today. So sit back, get ready to learn something. If you've been listening to the episodes this season, you know that we have a phenomenal sister, Dr. Champagne Odin, who has come to just bless us with the information. If I look at her like the Minister of Education, like we do in the Middle East, it's not necessarily the sermons that are going to tickle your fancy, but definitely that word of truth that actually will set you free, get you healed, and have you being about your own power economics. This sister has actually written over 40 books before the age of 40. She is a foundational Black American sister that your daughters can look up to. She holds the PhD that is not something that is an honorary degree given to your local comedians, but sister who has worked very hard going around the world, living the global experience in order to come back, not just through her education, but actually doing the groundwork. I consider this sister to be our present-day Harriet Tubman, because every time there's a full moon, and you know what Grandma used to do, she would just hum when no one else could understand what was going on. She would just hum a tune to let you know to prepare yourselves. So right now, if you are ready, not for escapism, but ready to actually free your own self, know that this journey with Dr. Champagne Odom is one that will set you free. And honey, you must be ready. Understand that, just like with Harriet Tubman, many, many people wanted to get free, but nobody wanted to put in that work. The most famous quote from Harriet Tubman that I love says, "I freed hundreds. I could have freed thousands if only they knew they were slaves." So right now, enough with the mental bondage. Let's get ready to release ourselves. Go on this voyage. I'll meet you at Niagara Falls. I will meet you all at the top. Get ready, get ready, get ready for none other than Dr. Champagne Odin. Good morning, girlfriend.
Good morning to you. That was a really great welcoming. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Through the work that you've done and the feedback that we're getting from fans, it's really an honor to be in your presence and know that every time you come to the show, you're giving us things that add to our portfolio, that actually help parents break generational curses, you know.
Yes.
And you're giving us the book club that Oprah has not been able, she was entertaining us, but sister, you're setting us free.
Right.
So it's always a pleasure to have you on board.
Thank you.
How's
it's a pleasure to be here.
And tell us, catch us up. What's going on in Japan right now? How are things at the university, professor?
University is going swimmingly well. Like I'm so surprised about how easy it is. I mean, before I started teaching university, I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna bomb. I don't know what to do. But when I stepped in, it was just so easy. And I think the reason is because I had taught at a university type secondary school, which actually prepped me for my now current job. So it's, girlfriend, I didn't know making money was easy like this. I had no idea, none. And my mom told me, she said, the higher you are, the less that you work. And I was like, and I believe her to a certain extent, especially for women. For men, I think they gotta, you know, keep working hard. But I understand what she's saying. She's saying, now you're a doctor. Of course, you know, you're working at university. Of course, it's not gonna be as hard as when you were a school teacher. So I was like, yeah, I think she's right on that point.
All right, having arrived in today's topic, we're talking about hierarchy. Can you tell the people a simple definition of what hierarchy means?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. My definition of hierarchy is just, it's similar to having a totem pole. It's like one's understanding, and this can be an animal, this can be a human, this can be a virus, anything with a conscious understanding of itself and its environment. That thing, animal, virus, whatever, knows its place or is aware of its place on the totem pole. So it's like, which level are you on? And also, can you get to a different level, whether it's leveling up or whether it's leveling down?
That's very interesting, because as soon as we talked about hierarchy, I thought about India and what that looked like, you know, because of the caste system in history would say that based on your complexion, you know, they had their own sect called the Dravidians that were the darkest
people. Oh, yeah, the
people.
Black ones. Yeah. They still got that. They call them the elites nowadays.
Shout out to
Delete Lives Matter. You're absolutely right.
And tell the people that, for those that you don't know, these are the blackest skinned people, the untouchables. They look at them like they're not the untouchables in the cool way, you know, from a Western mindset, but
right,
detestable, like the trash and the filth and the rubbish in the street. And pretty much, you cannot grow out of your skin.
Right.
Can't Michael That's Jackson right. that. No skill set right. will allow you to leave your group on that totem pole of hierarchy. Can I also
add that another reason why people can't really get out of that delete system, I mean, of being a delete person, is because of delete's people mindset. Like, I was watching a movie called White Tiger on Netflix. Shout out to that brother. Well, he's an Indian guy, but shout out to him. I mean, he was a delete too. But he was like a real mental slave, because he was like, no, you guys are my family. I love you so much. And the Indian chick was trying to tell him, she like actually schooled in America. She said, yeah, but we're not your family. Do you get it? So I think that's another reason why they can't get out of it, because they think that they deserve to be there. It's all in the mind.
I watched that same movie too. I'm glad we have that as comparison analysis, because White Tiger taught me why I see so many people from India and the Middle East, where I currently reside. It also helped me to understand why, when I first moved here, being someone who's from the diaspora, I was really sensitive to anyone who played the role of a servant. I didn't want to have my own servants. And then something clicked one day in the hierarchy pool of the mentality, the same way as this character in the movie White Tiger, is the mental slavery was so engraved there. You could not, you can't, you know, you can be friendly to people all day long, and you can be, they can look at you and say, oh, most black people from this part of the world are super friendly. They'll give me food, and they'll do things that any other race on the planet won't do. But at the end of the day, I had to understand that because of that mentality, that wasn't a friendship with me. They would still report my behind to the hierarchy of the culture of the land that I live in. They were at their beck and calls, like the, not even the greatest slave, but almost like a watchdog. And that's the only thing that it could do. But if you were only limited to that mindset of looking at people based on humanity, one void of mental slavery, one without a system of hierarchy, and just walking around lollipops and sunshine, people are people. And White Tiger, if you guys haven't seen it, check it out on Netflix, because this is really knowing your entire family and what makes you different, or what makes you have to, something has to snap. It has to be a life or death situation. Something about this character that the entire time we just thought that this might not work. And the only reason why there is a very difference, like Dr. Champagne said, was there are people from India who have been born in America. So, you know, once you're outside of your norm, you can be able to try to educate people, but it's a risk because of what they know to be their own normalcy.
And the fact that you're comfortable being a mental slave or any slave, and that it's normal, it's sick. And I feel like even like a lot of blacks, we're sick with it too. white supremacy and accepting it, it's a sickness. It is.
Well, let me share with you. In 1971, there was a film that was created outside of the United States that gave, and it's banned. I mean, this is the one film in America. Nobody in America wanted to be shown to any American because it's the foreign perspective on what slavery was like. The name of the movie is called Farewell, Uncle Tom. Not to be confused with any other version of Uncle Tom. Not Uncle Tom's Cabin. But Farewell, Uncle Tom is about two foreigners that come to America, and as they're traveling up the East Coast, they're seeing different plantations, whether it's the buck breaking system. You go into the horse stables and there are no horses, but there's simply your current day NBA players in there that all the slave owners would bring their virgin girls to say, hey, when we want to bust seed, we were guaranteed to populate this type of crop of humans if we bring these virgin girls to be impregnated in certain parts of Virginia or different things, you know, the Quaker plantations. And what really intrigued me was this is something that, like, back in my demented just thinking about Afro history, I would try to watch it once a year just to keep me balanced, because I know it was just a little harsh for anybody to stomach. Suge Knight could not get through this movie, Your Most Gangsta Cousin, but probably shy away from it. But in the first 5 minutes, Phyllis, there's a lot of American celebrities who are historical figures sitting at the dinner table, and there are little black babies that are crawling under the table, and someone drops a piece of chicken, and the host of the house says, don't do that, we just had to send one of them to the vet.
Wow. And
the male counterpart sitting at the table, you hear some distorted noise and you don't realize, you're like, maybe this is the fan that's going, but you understand this is like during colonial life where there is really no electricity. So there are actually babies under the table, black babies above the table swinging, causing a fan, which is also making a noise. And in between trying to hear what the male character is saying, you keep hearing the swing, and the man is saying, we are God. We're truly the creators of this. And it's just an awareness that the hierarchy that you're talking about in the first 5 minutes of this movie, you get to know that, yeah, you can have 100 people working at the house that only has a mother, father, and a son and a daughter, 4 people living inside. And that number imbalance is there, but the hierarchy is in order. The business plan is there. And the fact that my people at that period of time did not go to any hospitals that we might have available to us today, but the hierarchy said, we went to the veterinarians. So when you teach to foundational black Americans that they're less than human, that's the most graphic detail in that movie from the foreign perspective, to actually teach people what the hierarchy meant. When you understood the term mental slavery and you could look at humanity around the world, it is without a really deep picture until you see it on the Hollywood screen that shows you what mental slavery looks like and why it is like that to this day. So yeah.
Wow.
Check it out, Dr. Odin.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm actually on Amazon ordering it right now. From the States, of course, because they don't have it in Japan, I checked.
Well, let's get into it with Japan. I know that we're looking around the world at hierarchy, and I want to also understand what it's like in the, I'm South Asiatic in my part of the world, Southeast in the Middle East. So what is it like in Japan's in the hierarchical society?
Well, thank you so much for asking. And shout out to one of my students. His name is Brian, a 24-year-old foundational black man who did exactly what I told him to, the 4 steps to come to Japan. So once again, create your CV and cover letter, create a profile online, apply the job to interview, get your visa and come. He did that 4 steps, I think it took him less than a month to get a job. And now he's just waiting to be let into the country. So I'm very, very proud of him. So shout out to that brother. I'm so proud of him. You know, so he's the one that wanted me to cover this, which I did in my live. So what I explained to him and my other followers, and what I'll explain to you all now, is that the hierarchy in Japan, it's really quite amazing how it's set up. Like, I really do like it because it's honest. And the hierarchy really pretty much goes like this. Okay. You're not Japanese, therefore you're not in it. That's it. That's the hierarchy. Because a lot of people, they focus on things that ain't got nothing to do with them. You know, mind your business. You are not part of the Japanese hierarchy because you are not Japanese. The only one person that I have seen in Japan that was able to get into the hierarchy was one Korean dude who was very smart. He ended up leaving consulting company to go work for Google. He spoke Japanese, English, and Korean fluently. He was the only gaijin or foreigner that I knew that was able to get a permanent lifetime job in Japan. Only him. He's the only person I've known of. Now, I'm sure there's a bunch of other Chinese and Koreans that can get into the Japanese hierarchy because they're the white Asians, but outside of that, that hierarchy is not for you.
No.
So, yeah. So the point is, like, I think what Brian was trying to ask me is how does he deal with the hierarchy at work? And I was able to break that down. I'm sorry, did you have a question, Miss Queen Sunny Honey?
No, ma'am. I want to get into it.
Okay, cool. So the way that, like I said, the way I see the hierarchy in Japan, obviously it's men over women. I have no problem with that. And that's just kind of the way it is. Now at work, and I'm speaking specifically about schools, universities, and educational places. I am not talking about non-school jobs. Those are different. That's not my expertise. My expertise are schools, universities, and educational places. The hierarchy, you're still not part of it, but you need to be aware of it because you're a gaijin. You're not part of the hierarchy unless you're Chinese and Korean, which means you would be at the bottom of the hierarchy in the Japanese society anyways. They might let you in, but eventually you're going to have to drop your, you know, your name. You can't tell anybody that you're not Japanese, you know, just things like that. But that ain't for us. We are black. There's no way we can get in the hierarchy. It just doesn't work like that. But at school, the hierarchy usually is this. At the top, you have Kocho Sensei, which is the president of the school. And then you have Kyoto Sensei, which is the vice president. And then you'll have like the head of the department, and then from the head of the departments, you have the teachers who are in charge of their, their classes. And then within that, usually in Japan, there's always an English section. And the person who's in charge of that, I have always seen, has always been some white dude. And then at the bottom of that would be the teachers, the gaijin teachers. So, I mean, that's the hierarchy. And like I said, we're not really in the hierarchy. I don't want to be part of the hierarchy. I see myself as an honored guest, and that's where I want to stay. Because number one, I don't even want to integrate. Number two, I can't integrate. And number three, why waste my time integrating on someplace that I'm not supposed to integrate into anyways? So like I said, for foreigners coming into Japan, if you're not Korean or Japanese, everyone else, you're not getting in. That hierarchy's not for you. You go to Japan as an honored guest, you work, you stack your dough, and then you bounce. That's it. The problem, like I said, is that when foreigners, and I'm not saying don't take Japan serious, of course take it serious, but this ain't for you. You are a guest. You're here on a limited time. Some people might be able to retire. You might be able to, but still, you're not part of the hierarchy. So come here. Like I said, don't do escapism. Work your plan. Stack your money. And if you want to retire here, that's cool. If not, choose three other places, make sure your money is tight, and then bounce. I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, even for me, when we have meetings, I don't even talk in the meetings because it's like anything you say, even if it's like a foreign people meeting, it can be used against you. So what's the point, like I said, of trying to really get into the hierarchy if you're never accepted in? So So that was the first thing I was talking about on my live.
Oh, wow. You just summed up my entire state in the Middle East. So keep going.
Oh, wow. I keep going. I keep going. So I'm going to talk about specifically about the questions because he had 5 points. So that was point one I just made. And he was like, okay, so to go, move on for point one or to add to point one, he was saying, like, how do I deal with the way people treat me in school? And I just basically told him, just make sure you're professional at all times. Make sure you record everything. And I mean a daily practice. You know, I've recorded everything, and this is before I even had an iPhone. You know, so there's nothing stopping you from recording and I mean by hand and also by video if need be. There's nothing wrong with doing that. You need to know what's happened on a day-to-day basis. And like I said, once again, you're not part of the hierarchy, so don't worry about it. Be aware of it, but don't worry about it. Number two, he was saying, like, how do I conduct myself professionally? And how do I avoid getting in trouble? And I basically told him, dude, getting into trouble in Japan, like, you're already in trouble. You want to know why? Because you're a gaijin. So people are going to assume that there's certain cultural things you don't know, which you don't, because you were not born in Japan and you don't have Japanese parents and you were not born and raised by a Japanese mother. So you're already in trouble. It's similar to being born black. Like, well, black people are like, just keep your head down, your hair. It's like, that don't work. You already in trouble, you black. So it's the same thing as Japan. And I'm not saying, like, you're in trouble, the Japanese are out to get you. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you're not Japanese. So there's already going to be some thoughts about how you act in this country, which is not yours. That's all I'm saying. In terms of conducting yourself professionally in schools, like I just told him, there's so many things I didn't know I had to learn on my own, which made me angry because as an American, if we know the laws and the rules for that, and I'm not talking about white folks, I'm talking about black folks. If we know the laws and the rules, most likely we're not going to break them, especially in someone else's country. So some of the rules I had to learn is, okay, come to school 1 hour early. Maybe leave 1 hour late after you're supposed to. You know, lesson plan 6 months ahead of time. Do your syllabus 6 months ahead of time. Lesson plan a month ahead of time. Don't be on the phone at all because they'll see that as being lazy. Don't play games on your computer at all because they see that as being lazy. Don't draw at your desk because they see that as being lazy. Don't talk on the phone in the hallway. If you need to go and make a call, make it up in your English classroom, which is what you should have. And just, like, be quiet. That's it. I mean, the Japanese are always saying they want us to be Genki. I mean, I kind of question that because if we are Genki outside of class, then it tends to have problems. So just go there, teach. You know, when you're teaching, be Genki. Outside of that, be quiet. Don't say nothing. Just don't say anything. Trust me. Because like I said, anything you say can be used against you. And that's just kind of the way it is. I don't know. Whatever. Number three, he was saying, like, you know, what do I have to go out drinking? And I was like, and there's something called a nomi hodai. Nomi in Japan means, or nomu means to drink. Nomi is like also a play on the word drink. Hodai means all you can drink or eat. So a nomi hodai means all you can drink. A tabi hodai, taberu means to eat. Tabe is also eat. Tabi hodai means all you can eat. So oftentimes colleagues, and this is not for teachers, this is for everyone else, they go out to drink and you have to go, you can't turn it down. Now for teachers, we can't do that. Teachers can't be getting lit like that because we literally have to be present and alert for our jobs. And plus, I'm sure there's some legality we have there. Like if a teacher's getting drunk and turning up, that's morally and socially not okay. So teachers don't get lit like that in Japan. So if you do a nomi hodai, like you would probably go once every 6 months. So that's not a big deal. Just go, don't turn it down. Number four, he was saying, the culture to learn, like how do I learn a culture? And I'm like, well, really, I need to write a book about Japanese culture. I've been meaning to do that since 2020. But you are going to make mistakes and you're going to have to learn as you go. I mean, even if I write a rules, like 100 rules of Japan to not do, there's 100 more rules that you don't know about. Like, for example, you don't ask the principal to help discipline a child, which is strange because in America, the principals will discipline the children because we'll say, oh, go to the principal's office, take this pink slip, which sucked because you know you're about to get it. But in Japan, it don't work like that. Also, let's say if you go, like, you know, because I've babysit a lot. If you go to someone's house, you never use chopsticks. You use the chopsticks that are given to you. Because, like, in Japan, each person has their own set of chopsticks, and it's considered to be rude to use somebody else's chopsticks. But to foreigners, we're like, they're chopsticks. Nobody owns chopsticks. They're the family's chopsticks. But in Japan, they're not everyone's chopsticks. They're each person's chopsticks. But, like, no one who lives outside of Japan, maybe, I don't even think other Asians probably think like this, but I don't even think other Asians would think, oh, these are my personal set of chopsticks. So, like I said, the other foreigners, we're not going to get that because, number one, it's Japanese, and number two, it's weird. Like, why would you own some chopsticks, you know? But whatever. But anyways, like I said, I plan to write a book about Japan and the rules, but even if I write that, there's 100 more rules that you don't know about, that I don't know about either. And then the number five, he was asking about being homesick if you don't return from Japan. And as a doctor of philosophy, my question is always to question why people are asking their questions. So when he said that, it kind of made me think that, oh, he wants to retire in Japan. Once again, nothing wrong with it. Japan is the top place for me to retire. I have 3 other places I want to go just in case that don't work out. But the thing about it, the reason why somebody would be homesick is because you plan to not go back to America, which is cool. But as a man, as any man here, that means most likely your spouse would be Japanese. Nothing wrong with that. But black men, not Africans, foundational black American men, not the Caribbean men, because I don't really know too much about how they move and shake. But our men do not have the practice of actually having married different women around the globe and having families in different countries. African men already got their real kids back at home. So if they come to Japan, not all, but a lot. So if they come to Japan, they know any kids they have here aren't their kids. Our men don't have the practice of actually marrying multiple women in different countries. So when our men marry, especially overseas, those are his kids. But then about a year or even a few months into it, he starts to understand that that ain't his kid. But I mean, that's what we've been saying the whole time. And men tend to think, oh, well, my girl's not like that. Yes, she is, dude. She's Japanese. Like, she is not giving up her culture and her sanctity and her power for you. You know, it's similar to me being a Western American woman. I'm not giving up my American powers for my mate either. Because what can my mate do for me that my country can't? You understand? It's like my culture protects me in a way that my mate can never. Same thing with the Japanese woman. Her culture protects her in a way that her mate can never, because it's always going to back her up. So as a black man, like I said, if you're homesick, you're probably saying that because you're thinking about, you know, marrying a Japanese woman. Ain't nothing wrong with that. But this is why I say to the brothers, if you have no problem with your children being Asian and your legacy for the rest of your life being Asian, go for it. But if you want a black legacy, then you have to go with a black woman. There is no way you can have a kid with an Asian Japanese woman in Japan and that child be black. It's just, it don't happen. I mean, the kid looks black, but socially and mentally, they're Japanese. Nothing wrong with that. Like, I'm going to make this last point, then I'll be done. I had a father who's from the east side of Africa. He has many children in Japan. Nice dude, married. He was complaining to me about his 20-year-old daughter, saying that she's lazy, she doesn't know what she wants to do. And I said, she's not lazy. Her mom is Japanese. I said, you're saying she's lazy because you're seeing her as a black woman. She's not black. She looks black, but she's not mentally. I said, you know, and I didn't want to say to the brother, like, you should have thought about that. I mean, you got a handful of, I mean, you can count on 2 hands how many kids this man has with this woman. So it's like, you can't complain now. You know, if it was just 1 kid and you tap out, okay, but you had 2 hands full of kids. So that's it. So that's the hierarchy as I see it in Japan. specifically in terms of being a teacher in this country.
Amazing. I would love to go through these points with you concerning the Middle East so you could ask, kind of flip the interview questions for me, because initially, I'm telling you, this Muslim world that I live in, it is a beautiful thing to see a hierarchy established for hundreds and hundreds of years. In this society, most people know about this country called Dubai, which is the highest, tallest building on the planet. Somewhere along current history, they realized that people all around the world were starting to, you know, marry, intermarry with other races. And so the governments had to step in with the Emiratis and really kind of put a halt to that because of all of the benefits that comes from having one of the richest nations on the planet. And they realized there was a bit of a whitewashing that was going on, and foreigners and colonization would be the end result if you continue to just allow your citizens to marry outside of their own Arabic people. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, yeah, you come across a couple families every now and then who have intermarriages, but these things are null and void now because of the benefits that come by living in the Middle East. There is a welfare system in the Western mentality that looks like it's a bad thing, it's only for the poor. Over here is the thing like, oh, we don't have to spend our money on this. Our money is oil money. We get on our 18th birthday, we get food subsidies that help pay for things, whereas in your country, that's only to the poor. Here, we're so rich that we don't have to use this group of gold bars and pearls, all of this money that the government provides us with money for cooperative agreements. In America, the poorest parts are talking about co-ops and charter schools. The richest of the Middle East in their hierarchical system is to have co-ops in every neighborhood where, like right outside my window right now, I can walk to the equivalency of a Walmart back home. It doesn't have the Whole Foods caliber of food, but I promise you there is no such thing as homelessness and never being able to eat. You can get you a 10-pound bag of rice for 99 cents. And and will be good. So the hierarchy.
So I have two questions for that. So you're saying that the Middle East, specifically where you're at, they kind of have a welfare system for everybody.
It is in place for its own people. Therefore, if its people, if its own people have access and don't have to use their everyday dollars of salary to buy certain things, because that's already in place, you will guarantee to be fed, then those of us who are expatriates, we also benefit from that because, hey, that's nothing more than what's left over that the rest of us have the privilege of having access to, walking into those
stores. And when you say access to, do you mean like what you just said, the co-op you can go to?
Yes.
Nice. All right. And my second question is, okay, you know how we always hear about welfare states in America and in the UK? They really got welfare really badly there. Why don't we hear more about this welfare state in the Middle East? Why don't we hear about that more globally?
I'm about to hurt your feelings with this answer. People don't understand what rich means. When I say I live in the richest nation on the planet, there is no other currency higher. The American US dollar is like 33 cents, and one of their dollars is $3.50, more than triples itself. When I say rich compared to wealth, what I truly doubt, it gets down to it of knowing that you can't convince the average person here to buy anything on sale. That is the standard for the rest of the world. That's what, you know, needy people need, a sale. But if it's on sale, Gucci has never had a sale. Louis Vuitton has never, Hermes, all of these stores. When I go into my local malls here, you can't say, Sunita, meet me in front of Gucci, because there's several of them. And if there's several of them, then you can't even say, meet me in front of Starbucks, because it's like, okay, there are two IHOPs and 10 Starbucks and 4 Gucci stores in one doggone mall. So the concept of everybody else on the planet, they'll be like, in our entire country, we don't even have a single Gucci store, and you have this many. Well, when I say a sale sign, if it's on sale, they don't want it. I was standing in the hallway years ago, and some boys were just sitting there talking to me, and I understood Kanye West in a different way when it came to wealth and being a billionaire. I understood that he didn't need to have a limited mindset of thinking that in order for me to be a businessman, I need Americans to buy my products. He got outside of the mental box and understood what global wealth looks like. The woman that he married, Kim Kardashian, she has actually been in the countries that I'm in the malls that I'm in, and you know, her family is from this region of the world. You gotta skip a generation and not look at the generations that lived on American soil, but to know their roots and understanding. I'm standing in the hallway looking down on the floor, and four of my boys are wearing his latest Yeezys, and these are $1,000 pair of shoes that had just come out, and my kids have over five pair. The 80-year-old great-grandma is rocking a pair because they're the new Sealy Posturepedic shoes of just look ugly, but the comfort level was just amazing. So what can you say to children who have five pairs of $1,000 shoes? And no.
Sorry, can I interject here? So you mean to tell me Kanye has the Yeezys set at that price? That ain't for us. That's for them.
And he don't need, Kanye doesn't, it's a laughing stock for anyone who has never been to the Middle East to think that Kanye could even need a dollar from you. He doesn't need anything. If Americans never bought, and if everything that America ever sold was only on sale, or you needed to go to some sketchy website where it's not even a real thing, you're not even getting the art support that everyone else is wearing. Come on, darling.
Wow.
Anything that I see over here, hierarchy, I want to get into it on another level. My children in this society have the same names. Their middle, the name will have A-L and then a last name. So, of course, not just in Africa, but also in Muslim cultures, your first name, your the next name would actually say father, child of, and it would be your father's name. So coming as a foundational Black American, I got mad street cred in the Middle East because I could discipline your child by simply looking at their name and say, don't make me call Ahmed. And the kid is a part of society. They don't realize, oh my gosh, he knows my dad's name. But it's inside the name. It's not like in America where you got all the single mothers or people don't know who their fathers are. Somebody never wrote a name on a child birth certificate. This is hierarchy, baby. If you have a simple name, Mohammed, middle name, Al Mohammed, last name, Al Mohammed. Let's just make up a name. Mohammed, Mohammed, Mohammed. That means in that school, well, every year, his aunts also give birth and name the same child after him. So as he grows up, when he's a toddler, you got nine Mohammeds that you grow up with. All of you have the same names. By the time you get to middle school, it doesn't matter as long as we are one family, because in the hierarchy out here, for thousands of years, they have family reunion, not once a year, but every freaking Friday. Every Friday, the entire family comes together and they eat together, and it's a family reunion. So here you are being raised elementary, middle, high school, and you enter adulthood with your name being Mohammed, Mohammed, Mohammed. You knowing that when you got to school, anybody ever messed with you, the hierarchy that's in place in your blood has 10 Mohammed, Mohammed, Mohammeds that will be on the playground. And that's not even considered their brothers and sisters who don't even have, who all share a different name. You enter into that age 18 where you know the government is paying us, because upon adulthood, I get my money for becoming an adult. I get my money for going to university. And I also get money just because I want to get married. The government, all of these are my birthrights, not even in the family name, but this is just the government assistance for arriving to adulthood. So whatever businesses that were in place when grandfather passed away, that was passed down to Muhammad, Muhammad, Muhammad. We are 50 members in our family strong. I'm an adult, 18 years old, looking back and seeing that there are other babies named after me, and I am the role model. I don't have to look up to Jay-Z and Beyonce outside of my bloodline for a super role model. There's a legacy
so
in me.
Can I interject once more? Mm-hmm. It seems like you're saying that in the Middle East, the hierarchy is based on family. Is that right?
That's right. And just like in England, when you marry your cousins, you sometimes you want to keep that in the family.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
This is hierarchy. When we look at being a foundational Black American or someone like, oh, America the Great, because it's a melting pot of places and people coming together. At the end of the day, you are a teenager.
Coming together to be broke.
Thank you. You
are
a
teenager. American nightmare.
You have no historical reference. And those that you think you want to go to war with, baby. And I'm glad that you brought up about the fact that we're travelers around this world. Brothers and sisters, no matter if you're coming from the Caribbean, you're coming from Africa, you're coming from the West, wherever you go, we are truly an honored guest. And that is the reason why I have been here for 6 glorious years. When I go to America after about 2 weeks, I don't want to be in America because the standard is a bit third world for me. Once I'm used to something better. Every now and then someone asks me, when are you going back? And I'm like, would you ask Tina Turner when she's going back to Ike Turner? You always want better for someone. If there's something better after this, I want a part of that. But as far as being an honored guest in a culture, in the country, like in Dubai, you may have access to alcohol and that's your thing, although people who are a part of the religion don't partake. You may be over in Kuwait where it is against the law to have any alcohol. Wherever you travel, you better know the laws of the land.
And we're Black, so we should know the laws.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Speaking of hierarchy, I remember one weekend Kevin Hart went to do performance in Dubai. Now, a lot of times when you're an American entertainer, you see the baby, you see all these people. Well, it's just like hiring a clown for a kid's birthday party out here. Because from your perspective as being American, it's like, these are my people. These are people I patronize that I made it. But over here, it's like, okay, I just asked my dad for Taylor Swift. And he just flew her on a private jet, have her here for a couple hours. And, you know, this is the Chuck E. Cheese of it all. It's really nothing. And so And because we're like an hour away, you can just like hop on a plane. I'm in 3 hours, I'm on the continent of Africa. 1 hour, you could be in Bahrain, Oman, which is the Italy. It's like we have our own Italy in the Middle East called Oman. Oh my goodness.
Oman is like Italy?
Girl, oh my goodness. People need to get a passport and travel. We have.
And also, can I interject again? Like, I've been only to Dubai because I wanted to work there. And this is more like maybe 10 years ago. And I had a great time. No, it might have been 12 years ago. I had a great time. But I feel like all this stuff you saying, a lot of people don't know this. And why do you think this is not common knowledge?
When you have a real definition of a hierarchy, no one knows your business. Let me give you some, and I'm glad you brought that up. The 411 out here, you will not see people from the Middle East on social media with their faces. They'll have a whole boutique and you'll never see their face. They'll have children models, you'll never see their face. You may see a hand holding some Nescafe. You will never know what the inside of these mansions looks like. You will never be able to understand that when I say your whole family household might be the size of my child's parents' bathroom, garage, and everything. Whoever the richest person that you know is still maybe the servants' quarters for them. Even recently, a couple weeks ago, DaBaby, this American rapper, came over and he was on social media. And everyone was looking, and I'm sitting here laughing because He went to a local family house, and you would have thought it was a zoo. The whole time you thought he traveled to the zoo, but I knew the house he was at with the exotic animals. It's just one of my children's uncle's house. That's all.
Wow.
And so to stand there with all these men that were draped and all these women, sometimes I'll have a covered woman come over and talk to me. Girl, she got purple dookie braids up underneath her covering, because when she's not in the public eye, she's not wearing her covering. She's at home. She's looking Kim K'd up. But she has the aesthetic and everything that's going on with us, all of the things that we are up underneath. What makes it a hierarchy is the secrecy and the privacy. You don't want people to know. That's how you got colonized. That's how them boys showed up and stole your resources and your people, because you
Black people,
it.
We do like the floss.
Yes.
Yeah. Like that one guy, he was a millionaire, or maybe even a billionaire, and the black dude from Nigeria, he died in a jail cell in Dubai. That was sad.
Mm-hmm. Even Google the name Hush Puppy. It's a Nigerian guy who was out here and on the world stage, living in Dubai near the Burj Khalifa, flying private jets, everything. He wiped his behind with Versace, and he understood one thing. He actually got caught. He's in an American prison right now because the rest of the world hates that you can. This was nothing for us. So if you look online, you go, oh, well, Queen Sunny Honey and Dr. Champagne, y'all have it like that, baby. We can go to the Versace Hotel and stay. When you come, let's do that, because it's very affordable around the Sheraton prices. But in this part of the world, we don't value those things. I had my nieces come and visit, and I was sitting in a Dubai mall, we're sitting there, and I'm asking them, what's most surprising? And they said, in America, this store Sephora sells this lip gloss for $50. Over here is like at a Family Dollar price. You know, I would have never thought to grow up to be someone who has Louis Vuitton luggage. I don't value stuff like that, but here is everywhere.
It's like Target, right?
It is. My sunglasses are prescription Burberry. My reading glasses are prescription Versace. It is very much, no one really cares. One of my students the other day, you know, sitting here, it's like, man, my grandma grew up with the Gucci family, and for every time there is always some type of fashion show year after year up until COVID, my grandma's that person that picks out the accessories, and it's not her job to do it. It's just sitting there in the room of the wealthy, and like, you know, the models are walking through, it's like, put those emeralds on her, you know. Or having my student tell me, hey, miss, at our house in Switzerland, the queen of Switzerland stops into our house during one of our fundraising functions that we do for the impoverished in Switzerland. Okay, your money is like that you do at fundraisers in Switzerland, and the queen stops into your home. And this is, you know, these are not made up stories. These are real things.
Two things to add. Number one, didn't know Switzerland had a queen. Number two, didn't know Switzerland had poor people. So that's saying something.
I'm literally sitting with a fourth grader.
Wow.
And he looks at me a couple days ago, and he was like, how old are you? And I'm like, where I'm from, this is haram. You never ask. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, you never ask an American black woman how old she is. And so he was like, okay, but I get it. You're fourth grade with all these servants. And he was like, well, you know, Jeff Bezos. I was like, he's older than me. He was like, yeah, he's in his late 50s. And, you know, of course, Jeff Bezos is someone that you can look on the shelf right above his head and see a picture of Jeff Bezos standing there shaking his father's hand. Why? Jeff Bezos is the bomb.com to you, but he's nothing more than someone that worked for their family. It's like, yeah, my grandma's like 2 years apart from him. When you have the hierarchy of wow. raising children with a wealth mindset in a world uh-huh. that is very much, you know your value, you know your namesake, your father's name is attached to you, your family name goes so strong around this world, that is the true definition of hierarchy. And I do understand that people have come to this part of the world to get their money up uh-huh. and to leave. I am on this mission that is so different. I am so well aware that my no limit soldiers have no limit to the uh-huh. impact that they will make on this planet. I'm aware that as a foundational Black American, that there's a variety pack of people that look like me, but they, this society, when they meet me, you'll meet none other like me. And so I make myself very much at home where I am, in the midst of like the vast wealth, information, access, and you know, just considering the fact that America will have you die on cue and say that we're pretending to come up with cures. If a person has cancer in America, that's well, anywhere in the world, it's a society that charges $100,000, you better have insurance, you better uh-huh. have some type of career that will, if the insurance covers these days, because COVID has caused insurance policies to change. And people are just not affording to live anymore. But in the Middle East, darling, we have cancer research hospitals that it doesn't matter if you are the poor or the rich. Every person that enters that hospital only has cancer. It is all free.
So what I think I'm hearing is that in the Middle East, these are actually rich people, and in the U.S., we playing at it.
Playing games.
Wow. Can we also say, because I remember you and I talked about this years ago, how a lot of white teachers that would come to, you know, there would end up quitting because of all the rich Black folks walking around. Could you elaborate on that?
Ooh, honey, right now. There's someone that just, I overheard them say the other day, oh my gosh, it's the first time, he just came from China, actually, he's a teacher, uh-huh. and he's really uncomfortable because he realizes he's the only white male at the job. There's other forms of white maleness, but you know, you're from other parts of the world, but you're not a white American male, and he's feeling really alone, and it just kind of tickles me to see the true minority definition in itself. But what happens when people come to the Middle East and they are white-skinned people from America, first thing that pop up in a Middle Easterner's mind is like, why are you leaving all your white power to come here? What are you escaping from? There might be a criminal record. Let's look into this person.
Exactly. Or what you trying to spy? Like,
yes. Huh? If you're not a military contractor, what you doing out here, buddy? And let's watch how you assimilate with the culture, because yes, you are welcome. They're not going to dissuade you because you're white, but there's a concern with like, why are you here? And then as I study the white counterparts that I grew up on American soil, where they are pretty much the good old boys club, you grow up from elementary all the way through 12th grade, seeing that unfair advantage that you have, place them in the Middle East in some of these places that I've come, where it's not necessarily that worship of their skin, and I notice they get really uncomfortable with looking at the money and saying, I'm not on the money. There are other races that are on the money. I'm not the richest in this society, and I'm not the lawmaker.
And not only that, you had better not even upset any of those kids, because I'm sure, we can't probably talk about this publicly, but there are consequences.
Definite. I mean, I'm willing to move to Saudi Arabia. I hear that they have all kinds of, people say the worst things about Saudi. I love it. I love it. I love it. I always get Saudi reals all the time. I love seeing these black skinned, handsome Saudi Arabian men all the time. I've seen more non-Arab Saudi men, and I'm sitting here looking like, oh my gosh, because at the end of the day, they will chop your head off if you disrespected their culture, their children, uh-huh. their women. And that's why it is in the hierarchy, there is a very good thing about it when you know that you are adored, respected, and worshiped. Living in America, Hollywood will lie to you. The media will have you thinking that these women are the most, oh my goodness, they may not be honored. They're covered in this. When I got over here, and just look at Reverend Run's daughter, Angela.
Yeah.
She took a picture.
Angela, wildin' out.
She took this picture recently, and it looks like an Arab garb. And I promise you, if anybody goes on Instagram right now and see it, you'll be like, I have never seen her more beautiful. What coming from America as a foundational Black American, moving into a Muslim society, you could use your body curves as a sign of beauty. But I learned a beauty about myself. I came into a womanhood that I would have not had on my rites of passage. I have never seen more women with PhDs than I have in the Middle East.
Well, they're probably allowed to be women. They're provided for. They're allowed to come into their womanhood. So, of course, they should have a bunch of PhDs there.
Girl, compared to the women in America, if we added up every woman, every race in America with all the PhDs, and you compared it to women in other parts of the world, somebody needs to do the research on this. Because I'm telling you, honey, we've been lied to, we've been bamboozled, we've been hoodwinked, whereas interacting in this female hierarchy out here, you will hear young ladies say, yeah, my mother has her PhD in engineering, and she owns 6-7 businesses. That's the average conversation you're having about, that's not just daddy's wealth. That's the liberty. When you talk about, oh yeah, these women out here sharing a husband, I'm sitting here like, baby, you ain't never walked into the mall with me and see three gorgeous wives walking together. No kids are there because all their kids are at home enjoying life. They Gucci down red bottoms at the bottom of their little heels and just enjoying sisterhood on some best friend things.
You know, let me interject again. One of my students, I'm not gonna say which country they're in, they're Japanese, but they were saying how one of their classmates, she's from the Middle East somewhere, and her classmate was saying how, like, her parents are getting on her nerves because they're so controlling. And I was just listening, and then eventually my student said, yeah, but I don't know why she's so angry, because she has a driver, her father has like 7 kids, they all go to international school, and they go on vacation all the time. And I was like, yeah, it made me think. I'm like, and I'm not saying, listen, I'm not from the Middle East, I'm not a Muslim woman, I'm not, but when you put it like that, it's like, how confined are you really, if you're being provided for? Now, I don't, you know, condone anybody having to stay in a country if they don't want to or anything like that, but I like what you're saying and what my students said, this made me think that how really confined are these women?
Well, I want to end on that note, because I want us to go into part 2 next week, ladies and gentlemen, because there's a whole lot of layers to what money, power, respect, shout out to Little Kim, looks like. And we want to take the beauty of getting you passport ready, knowing that there is a world that exists outside of what you ever thought. And yes, think about it. One day you want to pass on a legacy to your kids, so they're going to complain about some of the rules you have. But your role as a parent is to protect them and to make sure that that wealth goes on for generations to come. So stay tuned next week. Thank you, Dr. Champagne, for coming on, because we want to serve the people even more of this Global Hierarchy Part 2 series. Thank you everyone for joining us, and until next time, do bye bye boo.